Crescentia Willman is being interviewed today for as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League on April the 6th, 2004 in San Antonio, Texas. Ruth Stewart is doing the interview. Chris, would you tell us a little bit now about where you were born, brought up, something about your childhood?
Yeah, I was born in West Point, Iowa on a farm. And I'm a child of 11 children. And I attended a parochial school 12 years, a whole family, all my sisters and brothers attended there. And I always enjoyed people. We always had a wonderful time with people. Anyway, we had a walk to school, 3.5 miles, and so I was interested in being a nurse, and so right after I graduated from high school, it was during the war, and I decided to be a Red Cross volunteer, so I took the little course as volunteer. And after I worked for about it, and I was working in a factory to make some money because I wanted to do something to further my education. And so after a year and a half, I went to nursing school at St. Francis Nursing School in Peoria, Illinois. And after 3 years in nursing school, I went to a small town in Keokuk, Iowa to work, and then I decided I wanted to go to Chicago to further my education and my experience. I worked in Chicago and went to school part-time at the University of Chicago, and I worked there for a total of five years. Then I decided to join the Air Force, and so in 1953, during the Korean War, I joined the Air Force. And
tell us a little bit about that time, joining the Air Force and in nursing.
Well, at that time, the nursing, there was always a shortage of nursing, but there was a nurse that had been in the Navy that was working at the same hospital that I was, and she thought that I should. She encouraged me to go into service. And so I applied, got an application and decided that I got the application and filled it out, within 10 days, I got the information back. I had taken my physical and everything, and in 10 days I was sworn in.
That was fast.
Yes, and then that was in March. And in May 23rd, 1953, I went to service. There, my first indoctrination to the Air Force was at Gunner Air Force Base in Alabama. It's a 6 weeks course where we learned to walk and drill, learned about the Air Force. And then after that, I was assigned to Amarillo, Texas. In Amarillo, Texas, I worked in the obstetrical department. I was very surprised because I didn't anticipate after working because I had had experience in nursery, in maternity and delivery room. They put me in charge of the department. And we used to have as many as 150 deliveries a month, and not too much help.
Busy time.
Yes, very busy. And I enjoyed it very much. And then from there, I went to flight school, and that was a 6 weeks course. Back to Gunner, Alabama.
Gunter?
go to Air Force Base, Alabama, within Maxwell, I mean, Montgomery, Alabama. And after that, I was assigned to Allison Air Force Base in Alaska.
Go back, let's go back and tell me a little bit about flight training and how what that was like.
Well, it's very interesting because you have a complete review of all of your of nursing, anatomy and physiology. You have you also have you learn a lot about medical and psychiatric nursing, as well as the difference when you would be flying than when you were on the ground. At that time, we had the C-47s, which was a cargo plane, and we didn't have all the facilities we have today. And we had to learn to swim if we didn't know how to swim, and also to survive if we had a ditch. And we also had to go out and pitch tents, big hole, trench holes for bathroom facilities and so forth.
And you did all that in 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had to learn fast.
Yes, that's right. And but it was very interesting. It was very interesting for us. And so after from there I was assigned to Alaska. And I was there for 2 years. And there again, the facility, we lived in Quonset huts, and the hospital was a Quonset hut. And we had very few nurses, so we had to work 12-hour shifts and then take call. But it was very interesting, and though it wasn't so hard, the work wasn't hard, it was just long periods of time.
What kind of care were you giving? Were you getting casualties at all?
No, not at that time. It was just strictly, and they were all male patients, because the female patients, we would see them in the clinic, but we would transport them to the other hospital in Fairbanks. And there were times when we had to go with the patients that were about to deliver, sometimes it was very trying because the highways was very, it was very treacherous. One time I had to go with a patient who we thought was just going to have a single birth. And so it was in the middle of the winter. We were in a Cracker Box ambulance. It's a 26-mile drive. And so when we got to the facility, we took her to the emergency room. She wasn't able to go up to him. Labor room, and she had twins.
That does happen.
Which was quite a situation. Yeah. But anyway, we also had to do a lot of, I'm trying to remember what, when we had alerts, and we had to go out and camp out. This was during the summertime, but we would pitch tents and go out, and it'd be 24 hours sometime we would be out. And
was that part of your duty?
Yes.
Or you weren't doing it for fun and games?
No, it was duty. And we would have to do this. We were with the 10th Tactical Squadron, which they are known for doing things like that. And we would be out for a couple of days, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the facilities was very limited. Needless to say, and at that time we had just a few nurses. So, and at the also that time we just had male technicians, no female technicians at all. So, all of the chaperoning and everything was done by the nurses. And from Alaska, I was assigned to the 13th Area back at Travis Air Force Base on flying status.
What year was that?
That was in 1957. It was a wonderful experience. Our duty was strictly with Airyback, and we flew in the stateside most of the time, except for we would go to Alaska twice a month. But occasionally we would have special flights to go to Japan or to Hawaii. And if you were an augmentee for the polio team, then you would go with they would call you, or the burn team, which I was on. And then they would pick us up and we would go to different places.
So this was where your flight nursing came in?
Yes.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And we left Alaska without your mentioning about the special efforts that you did in the communities there, which was a very interesting story.
Oh, I forgot that. That's right. Okay, yes. I had been to Fort Yukon on a trip with some of my friends. I was the pilot that flew there. And so I saw the desolation there and the need for medical care. And so after I came back, I asked our commander if we could make a project of this, that the pilots probably would be willing to fly us there. We thought it was a good idea, and so we got started. And so twice a month we would fly up to Fort Yukon, which took us about an hour and a half, and we would hold clinic in an old Episcopalian hospital, a Episcopalian church hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There was still some people, they had no doctors, but there was a few nurses there. And so we would go with doctors, dentists, and nurses, and technicians, and they had x-ray machine there, we had laboratory work that was done, they did dental work.
The hospital was not operational at that
It was more like a clinic. Mm-hmm. That they were trying to
So do. Your team went in and supplemented
yes.
greatly their,
right.
their services.
Uh-huh. But I think it was very interesting. And at times they would keep some of the people there, mainly because they couldn't get back to the villages, you know. But they were not really there as a hospital only. They just would stay there because they couldn't get back to their facility. But normally they would go back home.
What was your relationship with your patient clients there that were native Alaskan?
Well, they could speak some. Most of them could speak some English, and they were very grateful they just couldn't believe that we were doing it. We would generally bring food as well, and sometimes clothing. And after we had gone for a few times, we decided we would want to bring clothing as well, and that was always very well appreciated. We started that about third or fourth month that I was there, so for about 2 years we did that. And I don't know how long they really continued to do that afterwards, but it was very enjoyable.
Well, it's a worthwhile project for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for including that.
And then the one when I was at Travis, I was made a project officer for the squadron so that we could get all of our people vaccinated for polio vaccination. And polio was still very prevalent at that time.
What year was that?
That was in 1958. I think it was 58 actually that we did the project. And so We had over 350 officers and enlisted personnel, and then the rest of them were dependents. So out of 550, we had 93% that responded, and mostly all, I think all of the, we were required the rest of, to take the vaccination, and then dependents was at their choice. So, but they had to get two vaccinations. So within a month, then we had to do it another time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we got that accomplished, which I thought was wonderful.
That was a major accomplishment.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. And from there, I went to Tinker Air Force. Well, anyway, flying duty was really interesting because we got to go not only to the military bases, that included the Army and the Navy and all, but we also would go to some civilian airports because if any of our personnel had been in an accident or on leave or anything like that, we would come to pick them up. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how happy and excited people would be when we go to some of those small airports, thinking we were coming, of course. And many times they would come out with food for us.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And once in a while we would stay, you know, we would have to stay overnight because we, you know, those days we didn't have jets.
Mm-hmm.
We had four engines. And so it took us longer to go. But that happened every once in a while, and we always got a thrill out of that, really.
So you were heroes.
Yeah. And I remember one time we flew to Great Lakes and we picked up a young little boy who was going to have a heart surgery. We picked up this young boy and brought him to San Francisco. I remember that so well. One time we had a, from out at March Air Force Base, we had a patient that was a psychiatric patient, and we had aircraft problems, and we had smoke in the aircraft. And you see, those days, we always would restrain them on the litter, and they told us we probably was going to have to go down the chute because I was debating whether or not I should take that young man out of those restraints because that would just take time. So I decided to do that. And he was more calm than the rest of us. but we all got out safely.
And you're living to tell the tale.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Good. So.
But let's see, and then one time I almost had to deliver a baby in the aircraft.
Well, that's exciting.
Yes. She was a patient that we picked up, and I thought she was a psychiatric patient, and they were moving her so that she wouldn't go into, if she went into labor, she wouldn't do like she did in her last pregnancy. She had a psychiatric problem. And as a result, so while we got her on the aircraft, and she was apparently not supposed to be due, and as we were flying into San Francisco, we actually were going down back to Travis. She went into labor. And so instead of going to Travis, we went to Oakland, and we put her in the air. We flew there and we put her in a helicopter, and I went with her. We went to San Francisco to Presidium, and she delivered as in emergency. So that was a close call.
Yeah, it was very close call.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. But anyway, that was some of the exciting things that we had happen.
Interesting.
And from Travis, I went to Tinker Air Force Base and stayed there for 2 years.
Was that when?
That was in 1959. 6 to 1. Yeah. And from there I went to, that was the usual tour. Nothing too exciting except that, well, maybe it was. It was my first time that I got my feet wet being a hospital, being the chief nurse, because the chief nurse got sick and died.
Mm.
And so after I had been there only maybe about 5 or 6 months, and I was probably I wasn't the senior nurse, but they thought I was the most responsible. I was a little bit older when I went into service. And so as a result, I spent about a year and a half as a, chief nurse, or with not very much experience. I did have to do some of the work on the units because we didn't have any enough help, but we survived it. From there, I went to England. That was in 1961 to 64. And that was a small hospital. It was an old cantonment type hospital. And I worked in the obstetrical department part of the time, most of the time, and then the last part of my duties, I spent about 6 months in the clinic over at Alconbury, which was where we were attached to. I had an opportunity to do a lot of traveling, and again, there were times when we were without a chief nurse, and I was put in charge temporarily. And when I left England, I went to administration school.
What? You were in England
3 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was
From
61
to
64. In between fighting wars, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was the Cold War.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So your patient care during these periods, were you still doing air evac?
No, I was not.
Strictly hospital care, but yes. Routine?
Routine care.
Yeah. Okay.
Through this time, there were periods when our chief nurse was gone, and we had a change of nurses, and I generally had to fill in. From there, I went to nursing administration school in Maxwell Air Force Base for 6 months. I should say, within all these times while I was in these different places, I always tried to take some college courses. Because I do not have a degree, but I always did. I have a lot of credits, but everywhere that I went, Oklahoma, and when I was in England, when I was in Germany, everywhere I've always taken some courses. And the Air Force always, they encourage you to take courses in different things.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in administration school, we had took SOS, Squadron Officers course too. And from there, I went to Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois, and I worked as a charge nurse of the medical floor, and then I became the last year I was assistant chief nurse there, but always filling in when sometime when there was not enough help on the unit, so I did recovery room nursing quite a bit while I was in the SMU. From there, I got my first assignment as a chief nurse at San Angelo, Texas, and good fellow. And I spent 3 years there. very, Jolie's a small hospital. People are very friendly, and San Angelo.
And what year was that?
That was in 68 to 70, yeah. And I, while there I was, I joined the American Heart Association, did some work with the Heart Association, and I laugh at this. Those were the days when everybody was still smoking a great deal. And I tried to encourage our commander, who was a heavy smoker, to stop and try to get him to stop smoking in the different areas of the hospital. We did finally succeed that they wouldn't smoke at the nurses' stations. But I had a few problems with our doctors, but they complied after a while. So
good for you.
Mm-hmm, we did. And from there I went to Okinawa. Spent 2 years in Okinawa.
Certainly traveled a lot, didn't
you? Yeah, I did. Okinawa was a very interesting place. It was very small, it's only 60 miles long. And the smallest place is 2 miles wide. So I was at Kadena. We had a small hospital that was during the Vietnam War. We would get the air evac patients in, and especially we got a lot of drug addicts. And sometimes Camp Cooey was not too far from us, it was an army hospital then, and occasionally they were really short of handed, some of us would go over there and help them out, because we would get a lot of severe patients, casualties and all, So we would try to help them out once in a while. And I occasionally would take a flight. I was not on flying status, but occasionally we had a small unit there. I would go as an augment to the Philippines or to Korea or somewhere. But that was not my primary duty. And from
what was it like living in Okinawa?
I lived in the Quonset hut. And the people were very friendly. A lot of them spoke English. But, of course, they were Japanese descent. And unfortunately, we had a lot of demonstrations while I was there. And the employees at the base would have to stay on the base because
these were anti-American demonstrations.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They would flood the gates, so the people that were working for the Americans were afraid to go, and it was dangerous for them to go outside the gate, and so they would stay, and therefore the people were used to their own food. We did have our dining halls, but it was not what they were used to eating. So we had maids and all in our little hospital. And so one day I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I went and had a pot. I had a rice cooker. So I brought it to them, and they made their own rice. They really loved that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they really miss that, because they eat rice 3 times a week. They are.
Yeah. So. Staple food.
Yeah. But it was, and then I was there during the time when they turned it over to the Japanese. And then all the signs were Japanese, the money, they turned over to the yen and all, and they start building big high rises and all that. We were all afraid that I was going to sink. They did. The prices went up, especially the food. But I love the Oriental food. I mean, I love the Okinawan food because it was different than the Japanese or Chinese. Very different.
Can you describe what the difference was?
Well, I think their quality of meat seems to be better. And they ate a lot of vegetables, and I don't know. I don't think was as spicy. Yes. And I did attend Okinawan wedding, which was very interesting. And they had beautiful customs. You know, they really did. They had dancing, and they would have parades and all. And I always thought that the Okinawans, you know, most of them really loved us. They really did. They were happy that the Americans were there. You know, there was over 200 military facilities there at the time that I was there.
That almost covered the island, didn't it?
It did, and we had a real nice place for R&R, which was nice.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was up on the main part of the island, away on the tip of the island. And it had little small huts that we could use to sleep in. It had a facility that, like an officer's club. And it had a beautiful beach, and they kept it beautiful. They had the flowers, and the flowers were so pretty. You know, we had mostly all warm weather there, and the poinsettias and the hibiscus, oh, it was just beautiful. But and then they had little boats that we could take out. And it was a very nice facility. It was about 40 miles from where we were, and so we could go up there without any problems. And sometimes we would just drive up there for the day, but sometimes we would stay. And of course, you had to make reservations if you wanted to stay, because it was well used. And then from the Okinawa, I went to Fairchild Air Force Base with the chief nurse there for 2 years, and at that time, that is when I decided I was going to do something for the Native Indians, and I had a friend that was involved with it. She was a civilian that worked at the hospital, so she suggested that I do a little teaching with the girls, and we did teach some social and religious and health subjects to them.
And these were American Indian?
Uh-huh. The Spokane tribe. Uh-huh. And so I used to go up there every other Sunday. I'd go up there. Unless I absolutely couldn't, but otherwise. And they had a little facility. They had a church there, but the girls would come, and we would teach them a little bit about it. In fact, some of them even tried to teach them how to read a little bit, and so forth. So it was very interesting. That was a good project, too.
Did you have other contact with the local American Indians?
Oh, yes, I did. There was several other tribes in that area. I can't recall what the name of the tribes are. But we did, we went to this one place where we did some work with occasionally to help build, repair school, and then we brought clothing to them and food. So I forgot to mention that. This dawned on me. When I was in Okinawa, I went to a leper colony a couple times.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it was our church. And then we had other churches, too, from the base. would go up there, and we would bring food, not, yes, some food, but mostly supplies, you know, some, I think some medications, as well as some, and clothing. And we, it was really amazing, those people, you know, they, it was a hospital, but they lived right there, the whole little village, you know. And it was very, I would say kind of crude. They had just the bare necessities. And I can recall how they used a therapy with wax, so they put their hands in warm wax to help them relieve the pain. They also had, you know, they had, a lot of them had some of their limbs. They didn't have their arms or legs and all, you know. But as a whole, the people were receptive to us, and they were always smiling, you know. I went up there 3 different times in the 2 years that I was there. And the first time I was reluctant, you know, I don't know if I want to see that or not. But they were all ages, very small people, but most of the people were, you know, I would say 40 or 50 or 60 year old. I don't remember too, real old people. So, but they would help themselves, you know, as far as they could. And they had doctors there and nurses. And but they were all of Oriental, you know. Mm-hmm. But most of the doctors and nurses speak enough English that we could communicate. So.
When you went to the leprosarium, did you volunteer any activities, or was this more observation?
More observation, yeah. That's what it was. It was not really, we didn't do anything.
But you took?
We took supplies.
Things that they needed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. And let's see. Getting back to where we were, in Spokane. From Spokane, I went to Germany. I had requested a tour to Germany when I first came into service, and I finally got my choice. See, I am of German nationality. Both my mother and father are German descent. And they spoke some German at home, but not very much. But they, you know, they would speak. I knew a little bit of German, but I did take courses in German, college courses. And then when I was over there, I took some accommodation German so I could speak better. And I had relatives over there, which I found, which was wonderful. I had about 15 families. That
what kind of experience did you have moving up to Sam?
Well, I was really, we had a little bit of contact with this one cousin of my father's who we kept in contact during World War II. And we just would write once in a while, my aunt did. And so we did have her address. And so I decided shortly after I had gotten there, my niece came to visit me, and we decided to go up to see if we could find her. And as it was about 200 miles from Wiesbaden, up in the northern part of Germany. And when we got there, she wasn't home, but the neighbor saw my license plate, and we had our little book with us, and the communication said, she's a school teacher, but she'll be back at 6 o'clock. So we came back there. When we came back, she had an interpreter and everything. And it was just beautiful. And then she got us in contact with some more of the relatives from both my dad's mother's side and father's side. And so it was, and after that, found even some family right in Wiesbaden. And they have come back, they have been in the United States, and they also have been, I've been over there since I left too. And it's been just a real friendly situation, and they've been to my home in Iowa and everything, so it's really great. But they, you know, I had anticipated that they would be rather poor, but they were very conservative, but had some beautiful things that they had beautiful furniture and crystal and all that. Because they loved the wine. And it was always so joyful to go there. It just was, and I went to the place where the home where my grandmother was born and raised, and there's still somebody in the family that have the home. So, and from Germany, I spent 4 years there. While I was in Germany, I was an augmentee for a command nurse who was stationed in Ramstein.
Now, what's an augmentee?
Well, okay, in other words, when she couldn't go on trips to different places for inspection, I would go. I was the augmentee for her.
And sort of a substitute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then as a result, I traveled all over the Turkey, Greece, Spain, Italy, Belgium, Holland, everywhere, and all over Germany. You know, different times I was able to go just for a couple of days so that was interesting. I was very particularly interesting when I was able to go to a celebration at a British base, air base in Germany, that they had invited the commanders and myself. We went up there and it was just beautiful. They treated us like so well. You know, the British people, they're very, the protocol is so precise and so beautiful. It was very interesting. And as a result, they came down to visit us. Of course, we were able to give them a good welcome, too. So. And at Wiesbaden, we also always held seminars for the whole command because of the largest hospital there. And so all the different people from the different areas of the European command would come to Wiesbaden for seminars so that the nurses could keep up their license accreditation, because we have to have so many credits every year. So
that was an Air Force requirement, was it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you had to have so many credits. And you have to keep your license up in one state. Mm-hmm. So, and it was very interesting, as well as, you know, we would get guest speakers from states that would come over to help with our seminars. And like we had, you know, people from University of Kentucky, and we had one from Florida. I forget now where they all were, but they had quite a few. So. And from Germany, I went to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, where I was chief nurse there, till I retired in 81. And while I was there, it's when we had the Cuban refugees arrived. They notified us. Maybe a week before, that they were going to come to Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and we were going to have to be taking care of them. And so fairgrounds was not too far from our from our hospital, as well as one of the where they put the airplane thing, that have hangar. And so anyway, we had set up a hospital, and they let us use two of the permanent buildings on the fairgrounds, and 10,000 Cuban refugees came with them about 2-3 weeks. And the patients...
10,000?
Mm-hmm.
And well, were they sick, or was this a screening?
No, they were screening, but there was a lot of them that were sick. We put up tents for them to live out on the fairground, but those that were ill, they would go into the hospital unit, and those that were severely ill, then they would come to our hospital. But it took about 10 days to 2 weeks before we got any extra help from. We got a few medical technicians, but we really had to stretch our help during that time. But we survived it. And then there was in September of the 12th, they were moving some of them out. They had to get them out because there was forecast for a hurricane. And so therefore, on the 12th, we did have a hurricane on the 12th, Frederick. We had a hurricane there on the 12th of September, so we had gotten all these people out.
That was what year?
That was 1979. Mm-hmm. And I retired in July 1st of 81.
You've certainly had an interesting career.
I haven't done anything really tremendous, but it was interesting.
Very interesting. What are your main memories, overall, general feelings about your time in the Air Force?
Well, it was a very rewarding experience. It was, we had a wonderful experiences. It was very rewarding. It probably wasn't anything that I really thought it was going to be like. You know, I don't know what I thought it was going to be like. But made wonderful, wonderful friends, and so many opportunities to do things I never would have been able to do. And I can say that I was very fortunate to have good supervisors and chief nurses, and they
make such a difference.
Mm-hmm. It really does. And commanders were good, and the doctors. And you know, the thing is, you always work with youth. You know, and you always, and that was one of the things I thought was so interesting, that, you know, that the young people, they come to you, and they had very little experience, or had never probably maybe been away from home for very long, and how they developed into such good people. And we had a few that we had problems, you know, sometimes, but as a result, most of the people were very very dedicated, and I think that's what. And we put in lots of long hours, but we had lots of fun. So I got to travel a lot. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
And since your retirement then, did you retire here too soon?
No, I retired at Eglin in 1981, and I left there in 85. I enjoyed it there. I liked Fort Walton Beach, and I had lots of friends there. But it's a very small place. And it is, and if you love water sports and all, you know, it's just wonderful. But there's not a whole lot of history. You have to go away to get somewhere. And I just always enjoyed going to San Antonio, because I used to come down here for seminars and for would I sometime have it be on the board, promotion boards. And so that's why I enjoyed coming here. And I had a lot of friends, some friends here, but I've made more, lots and lots of friends here than I've been here.
So that was in 85 that you came here?
Mm-hmm. And I built a home.
And have you been involved in veterans activities since you came here?
Oh, yes. Well, I joined the WOSL right after I came here. And I have been going to Veterans Hospital once a month ever since 85. Yeah, I think 86, I think I started going over there. And I used to, we had a courtesy booth when we were at Lackland for the newcomers every Saturday. And I used to go out there. When my first couple years that I was here, I would go out there once a month. And I went to the USO. I helped them down to the USO some number of times. You know, when I first came, I did a lot more of that. Mm-hmm. And then I got involved more in my church activity, and I was an ombudsman for a nursing home for 8 years, till I had a hip. And it's a little bit too much walking, so. Mm-hmm. But I still do a lot of volunteer work. I work about 3 or 4 days a week. I work over at Santa Rosa. I do the information desk, and I also give communion there. But I visit at our church at St. Matthew's. We visit new parishioners and the sick and things like that. We have a meeting every week. We do at least 2 to 3 hours a week.
So the basic interest that got you into nursing of liking people and liking to work with people and help people has carried through not only your nursing, active nursing career, but as you are still nursing in many, many ways, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, very, very interesting career and very interesting story, and certainly appreciate all the special activities and directions that you took during that time and took advantage of.
I really enjoyed my career. I really did. Yeah, it was really great. And I still get calls from a lot of people. But I bet you your career is very interesting too. I know it is.
Well, thank you very much. We'll close out Chris's career at this point.
Okay.
And do appreciate the time and effort that you've spent in getting this recorded
okay.
for our Library of Congress.
Okay.